I mean, the thing is, I have a lot of respect for any startup, which, especially in when it comes to personal care, or I kind of admire anyone who's kind of got the cojones or the balls to, or the guts to really attack one of the big players in their own pond, you know, in their own pitch, you know, like, well, we're going to take on deodorants, or we're going to take on cleaning products. Yeah, they're the ones I really look at and kind of admire, to be honest.
Welcome to Swedish Innovation Podcast. Here we export Swedish unicorness. We skip the buzzwords and we focus on real life stories from Sweden's most innovative doers. Today's episode is about single plastic waste, which is discussed highly today. And today's guests actually comes as a recommendation from you listeners on this topic. Adam Webb is the founder and CEO of Lifelong, which develop products just as the company name says, Lifelong products. So instead of using single shampoo, soap, or other type of dispensers that you need to throw away directly, they develop sustainable and good-looking personal care products. And now the latest one is with their Lifelong deodorant. So let's start talking with this serial entrepreneur, Adam, and try to get his best advice on how to start a product company.
Hi, Adam, and welcome to Swedish Innovation Podcast. How are you doing today? How is life?
Life is very good, but very busy. And thank you very much for having me.
It's great having you on the show. And the background, even why we have you on the show, is that I know we had episodes previously where we talked a lot about plastic and plastic waste. And we asked our listeners and network out there to give us some recommendations of people to talk to regarding on how to get rid of our plastic dependencies, or just having someone who is a more expert in the plastic field. Do you think we got the right person now?
I wouldn't call myself an expert in plastic, but I'm very passionate about lowering people's plastic waste. So if that's the person you want to talk to, then I think I'm the right person.
That sounds good. So how did we end up here in trying to reduce plastic waste? Has it always been something you been working on? Like, are you, for example, a chemical engineer and always been into trying to reduce plastics? Or what got you into this track?
No, my background, it's more of an entrepreneurial spirit of an idea, basically. I've always been someone who's come up with new ideas, new products. I have a book I call The Bible with all these crazy ideas which pop in my head pretty much on a daily basis, and I need to write them down. But when it came to the plastic products and my dislike for them, was about 4 years ago, 4 years ago, I was putting on some deodorants, just with a generic plastic deodorant. And I just thought to myself, God, how many of these deodorants am I going to use throughout my life? Use, throw away. And I thought, well, how many people in Stockholm are going to use these? How many people in Sweden? And then there's like the world. And my mind was just like, Jesus, you know, these are really polluting the planet. Like, there must be a better option than this plastic deodorant. And I couldn't find one. So at that point, a little bit crazy, I decided I'm going to make the world's most beautiful plastic-free refillable deodorant to replace all of this. And that's pretty much where it came from. It wasn't like I spent my life against plastic. It was when I became more aware about it, I then started thinking about products I could create.
And I guess if you look at the deodorant as a product, it's a lot of plastic and very little, I'll say, can you call it active material, or like the substance that actually is helpful, like the actual chemical that you want to put on your body is very little in comparison to the plastic you actually buy. Is that correct?
Oh, exactly. I mean, you get this like single-use plastic tube, which has very little amount of liquid deodorant in it. It lasts you a couple of months. And then what do? You throw it away. Or for example, some people say, oh, well, it's recyclable. But it's not really, because, you know, if you recycle one plastic once, the chances of someone recycling that plastic again are very minimal. So, you know, as a planet, we just can't keep up with recycling. Like, people think, oh, we can recycle. But unfortunately, like, human consumption is far outweighs humans' ability to recycle. You know, it just doesn't work. I mean, I know in Sweden, there was a crazy stat going around that Sweden recycles 90% of its waste, which just totally isn't true. What happened is they took out the incineration program from what was being recycled. And well, actually, it went down to 15% of household plastic waste was recycled. Sweden, you know, they burn trash, which can be seen as a good thing or a bad thing, depending on what side of the fence you sit on. But if we can just get rid of the plastic, because what happens when you burn plastics, they create really bad toxins, dioxins, which are really cancerous. And I know that the incineration programs say, oh, well, we collect all of these and we keep them safe. I'm not sure I 100% believe that. So if I had this goal of like creating plastic-free products where you don't even need the plastic, then it won't need to go into recycling, or it won't need to go into incineration. So that's kind of where I'm heading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know we had a previous episode on circular economy and with Elin, and this we talked about again how we burn our waste in Sweden, and one part of us are proud, like, look at us, we don't have any large mountains of garbage. But on the other hand, is it really a good thing to burn things that can be used again for other things? That I mean, it's also garbage, maybe should be seen as a resource to a larger extent than how we treat it today. And regarding then this product, if it's no plastic in it, what's in it? I mean, what is it made of? Can you give us some insights? Well, how can you even do a plastic free deodorant?
Yeah, so like the deodorant was my dream product. That was my like light bulb moment. Ching. But I went through a small incubator and got a small amount of investment, and they really wanted me to look at the much bigger picture. You know, they want this to be a $1 billion idea. So you have to look at many more products. So we kind of put the deodorant on the shelf because they thought the product was too small, and we'd had to look at hand soap, body wash, shampoo, getting into retail stores and all of this. But within that process, we went through this small accelerator. I said, I'm going to create this plastic-free personal care range, but I didn't actually know what it was going to be. You know, we just pitched this massive idea, and we managed to get through, and then we had to actually create it. That and we had a short amount of time. So initially we were looking at a small, thick, condensed liquid which we could possibly ship, you know, which you could mix with water. Because there's two products. We could have done like the cleaning products, the cleaning tabs, which you might see around. However, that was a bit more simple than doing personal care products, because personal care products, there's more certifications and it's a bit more stricter because you're putting it on your body. So we decided to go with personal care, and we just didn't have a product, so we had to search high and low. And I remember when we had this office and we were going to put them in this cellulose pouch. That was our first initial idea, put it in a cellulose pouch, this liquid. And then we did this test, we had like 20 of them, and the pouches just started disintegrating and falling in front of our eyes. And we had these kind of like a nightmare. Like, imagine having a warehouse with 100,000 shampoos just melting. So after that, it was like, oh no, we have no product at all. So we had to go back to the drawing board, and we managed to stumble upon the idea of a powder which you mix with water. And powder is easy to ship, it's easy to store, for example. So to answer the question, that's what we work with now. So we work with a very sustainable manufacturer who works with powder, also to lower plastic. That's her whole reason she does it. And you basically take the powder, which is shipped in a paper-based pouch. So it's like a small paper-based envelope type thing. I can show you one's here. This is the deodorant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like super thin.
Yeah, and you're showing me like a very small envelope, kind of like the envelope I buy with seeds if I want to do plants and gardening, that size of an envelope, yeah.
Yeah, and then what happens is you take the powder, you put it in your dispenser or your deodorant, and you simply put tap water in from home, and then you mix it, shake it for 20 seconds, have a bit of an arm workout, and then you have your deodorant. So
the whole dispenser deodorant thing, is it like I imagine a real deodorant with a ball and everything, or is it dispensed in another way? Or
yeah, so it's actually quite a big project to do, because initially we wanted to create the deodorant applicator, and then you have the actual deodorant, you know, so there's two parts, and then there's the actual shipping of the product to the customer. So the idea was to make the most beautiful refillable roll-on deodorant in the world. Something so beautiful, you want to keep it forever. So hand it down to your grandkids, or, you know, like that type of, you know, like a family heirloom, maybe not quite that much, but, you know, something which you just won't throw away. The whole idea is not to throw it away. So we've come up with a really nice design, and it comes in three colors, black, rose gold, and silver. And what we have, you can unscrew the top, and it has a roll-on ball. So it's like a normal roll-on deodorant. However, the ball is made from crystal glass, which you can choose different colors, maybe black, clear, or pink, depending on your style. So you can customize the deodorant. And you can take the ball out, you can unscrew it, you can wash everything, so you can keep the product clean. And the bit which I like, which for some reason I have a love for magnets, I always have, it has a really nice magnetic lid. And because it's a metal, it clinks. Mm-hmm. So you find yourself just constantly clinking your deodorant because it just feels nice and sounds nice. So we're really trying to revolutionize how you deodorize, make this mundane task of putting deodorant on in the morning, which no one really gives two flying craps, to make it into a feel good thing. So when you put an expensive perfume on, you feel good, you know, you're like, this is what I'm going to wear. I'm going to smell great today.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of want to do the same for deodorants.
Mm-hmm. I see. And I guess, I mean, it's a good thing to compare it to perfume, because perfume, I would say, is very little plastic. And you rarely buy one once a month. I mean, I still have the perfumes I got 15 years ago left. And you have them on a nice shelf because the bottles looks nice, right?
Exactly.
So you can have them forever. I think I even have a few that I got from my grandma when she passed away, because I felt it was sad to throw them away. So I guess if she would have had one of your deodorants, I could have taken that one with me as well then. You know?
Exactly.
It passes on to your grandkids. Maybe washed it first. But I guess that's the thing then, that you really can take care of it. Rather than you seeing as a single waste product. But besides that, I'm a bit worried, does it weigh a lot? Can I have it when I travel, or will it break if I drop it? Or
no, so it's made from, we had to decide when we were actually prototyping the product, we decided to either have a stainless steel one or a hardened anodized aluminium one. And it was I kind of like them both, because the hardened anodized aluminium one, it was super light. I mean, it weighs less than a small glass, you know, it's super light to hold. It feels good, you know, it's kind of got this kind of Apple-esque kind of design to it. But then the stainless steel one was super heavy, and it just felt like, I wouldn't say better quality, but it just felt more like something.
Like solid, like real shit.
Yeah, exactly. And we were toying up between which one, but because obviously people will want to travel with this product, it kind of worked a bit better with hardened aluminium. You know, the lid, magnetic lid stuck harder. It was lighter, easier to travel with. So we went with aluminium. So yeah, it's really easy to travel with. No problem at all. You know, you can carry it to work if that's what you want to do. So yeah, super light.
Mm-hmm. Fun. And regarding this, like, we're going to talk, obviously, I mean, more about also your entrepreneurship way and all of those things. But before we leave the product for now, if you really got curious and you want to put a hand on these, like, when will they be available and how can you get them? Is there a plan yet on how it will reach us consumers?
Yes. So it's been a 3-year project and you go into these things thinking it's going to be so easy. And then you're like, why am I doing this? but I have a background in Kickstarter campaigns. And for those people who are listening who don't know, Kickstarter is a crowdfund platform, predominantly in the US and in Europe. And it's where entrepreneurs or creators like myself can pitch their product or show what they've created, and then people can then back the campaign. And what happens is they back for a certain amount of money, and that then gives the creator the opportunity to then create the products and deliver to the end consumer. So I've worked on maybe 6 or 7 successful Kickstarters, and this will be my next one. We finally have a launch date, which is the 2nd of March, and that will be at 7 p.m. Central European time.
Cool.
So please back me because I need your help.
So that means that 2nd of March, the Kickstarter campaign starts, where you can actually, like, what do you call it, like register or sign up that you want one of these products, right?
Yeah, so it's called pledging. You pledge. You make a pledge and you can choose, for example, whether you want 1 deodorant or 2 deodorants or 3 or 5. You can choose different kind of crystal balls to match with your deodorant. You can buy extra powdered deodorants on it. And then what happens is the campaign will be going for 2 months, where I'll hopefully be able to make enough money to be able to finish the campaign. And then once the campaign's finished, the Kickstarter collects the money, sends it to me. I then pay the manufacturers, create the products, and ship it to the end consumers. And the reason I love Kickstarter so much is because, which I can just talk a bit more about this product, is because you automatically get to sell to everybody across throughout the whole world. You know, it's not like starting a small shop in Bondigarten or in Stockholm and having a small amount of people around you and trying to sell locally. You know, you immediately sell globally, and then you get global recognition for your products, and it just works so well, basically. And why I'm so excited about this specific product is because once we ship the deodorant applicator out, okay, that's going to take some shipping, but the actual refills, the deodorant refills, they only weigh 6 grams. I mean, you can see how small and thin this is. So we can ship 3 deodorant refills anywhere in the world for the cost of 1 postage stamp. And there won't be any problem with customs stopping the product coming in because it's a letter. So already we have this massive advantage in this new market we can get to very easily. I went off on a tangent there, but sorry.
No, but it's fun. And regarding that, you did Kickstarter campaigns previously. We need to talk about this because my experience talking to people about Kickstarter is that it sounds very, I don't know, cool and that you reach everyone at the same time. But I heard very few actually successfully made their Kickstarter campaign that made it to the very end. So, like, could you share some advice or tips to the ones who want to do a Kickstarter campaign but feel a bit afraid or maybe done it 3 times and didn't succeed? So, like, what's the key secrets or what type of products like should you go for a Kickstarter campaign with to be able to succeed?
You know, this advice costs lots and lots.
All right.
No, I mean, it is kind of like a secret source of how you get it. I think the last company I worked for was called Flights. They did levitating light bulb lamps. It was a super cool company in Stockholm. Three co-founders, really cool. I was their first employee. And I think we did like four Kickstarters and they raised nearly $2 million.
Wow.
So, that's cool. And there is a kind of method to the madness. And my twin brother, he done one for 300,000, which I helped. And I did another one for about 100,000. So you can't just come up with an idea, put it on Kickstarter and expect suddenly it to be a success. You know, that's just, or make a good video. You know, you can have an amazing product, but if you don't have everything in place, you're going to struggle. And so I could talk about this for hours and hours, but just to sort of sum everything up, you need to have a very compelling video, lifestyle video. You need to be actually selling a product. So, you know, if people back my Kickstarter, they know for however much they're going to get a deodorant. Some people do a Kickstarter and they don't actually give out products. So the most successful campaigns are ones which offer products for a pledge. So you need to have a good product, a good video, a good community of people following your campaign. So like it's called a pre-email list. So a list of however many people who could possibly back your product. So you need to start building this campaign of people and building up the excitement. So what I try to do before my Kickstarter is I'll do one email a week introducing the project, you know, 4 weeks till launch, 3 weeks, only 2 weeks, 1 week, then today's the day. And then when I launch, I send another email out. Now you can back it. And I offer something called early birds. So people get like a 55% discount for the first 200 orders. And then what that does, that then reaches my campaign goal of however much I want to raise. And then the Kickstarter see that you've reached your goal and it helps push your product with the algorithm. So there's many things, but you also need to have money for advertising, which unfortunately I don't have now. Actually, I spent all my money building it. So I don't know how successful this campaign is going to be because I actually have no money. That's my whole part missing is the advertising part. But I've done a lot of other things like working with a company called Seven Clean Seas who remove plastic from the ocean. So every time you pledge a deodorant, we remove 2 kilograms of plastic. And because of that, there'll be email in their database of people to speak. I partner with another company called Tooth who does plastic-free toothbrushes who email their database. So it's kind of building this like organic community to help really push your campaign. But like you say, it can never ever be 100% successful. You never know. So
exciting. And how long is the period of time? Can you set this yourself or is it always a week or for how long does it go?
Yeah, so normal campaigns run for 1 month and that's what they advise you to do because you manage to, most of the sales happen in the first week and then the sales die down and then people follow the campaign and then at the end of the week, more sales come up. All the campaigns I've ever done have been for 1 month, 30 days. However, this one, because I don't have the money for advertising, I've set it to 2 months. So you can either do 1 month or 2 months and they're your only choices. And the reason I'm doing 2 months is once the campaign's up, if it's struggling a bit, I can then reach out to more magazines, more newspapers. I have more time to push it rather than stressing myself with just 30 days.
Well, this was very good advice. I think anyone who's listening at least owns to check out your campaign now at Kickstarter and maybe have that as, I don't know, a role model to understand what do you need to put in once you want to launch something. Like what should you have ready? As you said, perhaps the product should be there or at least an idea of the product. So when you, what do you call it, pledge, you get something back of it. So then a question, if you don't have a product to offer and you pledge, do you get anything back? Like, do you get equity in a very small share or is it just karma?
No, so you're not allowed to offer equity on Kickstarters. But for example, you might have someone who is making a movie, you know, and you put money in and you don't actually get a physical product back, but you get to watch the movie first. So these are the type of other campaigns, and that's when you really need to build a community around, because you're really just giving money to a, or maybe, for example, an art installation or something, you know, you might be able to be the first person to go. But I mean, I absolutely love Kickstarter, and it's enabled, like, I call us wantrepreneurs, you know, these entrepreneurs who keep wanting to build these crazy things. It gives us a kind of a stool to stand on and show people our products. And, you know, there's been some amazing companies built from Kickstarter. So
I would, favorite examples that you could, that you would?
Not so much when it comes to, I mean, I loved what my last company did, Flight, with the levitating light bulb, because, I mean, it was a magical product, you know.
But people... really, is it a light bulb flying in the air, or
what do you mean? Yeah, so that's the thing. It was a, it's a lamp, basically. Yeah. It's like a bedside lamp, and it's like a small square base, and it has four magnets inside this wooden base. But then the light bulb, which has a magnet in, floats in the four magnets. So it's just like this light bulb, which is floating. It floats maybe, I don't know, 12, like, I don't know, probably 10, 12 centimeters or so. And then it sends electricity through the air. So it's like a float, an actual floating light. It's amazing. It's amazing.
That's so cool.
So they were a great product. And my twin brother, I have to admit, he, yeah, bastard, he done a really good Kickstarter as well. Like he reminds me a bit. He's a bit of a crazy inventor. And he did something called Oddball, which was a bouncing musical drum ball. But because he's such, he's a great art director, he's worked for Apple and he's worked for Uber and all these things. So the actual design and the branding was just amazing. So that was a cool product as well.
That's cool. Thanks. And regarding this entrepreneur, wantrepreneur journey you have done, I mean, can you share some insights maybe of your biggest high and low you had so far? Because I think many people, they think the entrepreneurial lifestyle is pretty cool and glamorous. And if you would tell us the real version, like what do you would be your biggest high and low so far on this journey? Because I guess this, lifelong, as you call the plastic-free deodorant and the other products, isn't your first company and product you created, I guess.
No, I've done a few and had a lot of failures, actually. So, as we like to call them, learnings. You know, I've had a lot of learnings throughout my time. I spent the first half of my life working for the British government, kind of like in a diplomatic lifestyle in Paris. And it was easy. We had like beautiful apartment paid. We had good money. We didn't, you know, worked a few hours a day. But, you know, that entrepreneurial thing inside of me was burning and you just couldn't do it working for the government. And I felt a bit like a parrot. Well, I talk a lot, but a parrot trapped in a cage, you know, so I had to kind of get out. And I always had, but when I was in France working for the government, I set my first company up, which was this was back in 2006 or something. And it was an iPod iPhone repair company online. Sounds a bit weird, but no one had anywhere to repair their iPods. So we created this website and people shipped them to us. We diagnosed them, wrote back. It was like the first e-commerce which I built. And it worked quite well, actually, because we were the only one in France doing it. So we're top of Google, so people found us easily. And, you know, it dipped our toes into, like, sort of business and online business and marketing. But, you know, like, when it comes to sort of the highs and the lows, I suppose, you know, you have many small highs, like your very first order or, I don't know, your first investor pitch which goes well or... You know, there's many sort of small highs which keep that carrot dangling on the, sorry about that, which kind of keeps that carrot dangling in front of you. But at the same time, there's many lows as well. You know, like I nearly lost one of my best friends from the iPod and iPhone company because he was living in my flat. There was a lot of miscommunication. His girlfriend at the time moved in, and it all just got very messy and the business got complex, and you could feel it in the air that it wasn't working. So that was pretty much a low time. But what I learned from that is when people say never mix, you know, business and pleasure, I don't think that's necessarily true. You just need to know your boundaries, you know, like understand, all right, this is one of my friends. I'm not going to allow business to ruin our friendship, you know, like if we have a disagreement, I need to be able to cut and say, right, this is only business, and still go and have a beer and a chat with him. We're really good friends now and we laugh about it, but at the time it was pretty tough.
Well, thanks for sharing. And a new thing we added to our podcast now, what type of company or startup out there besides your own would you like to highlight, like a pay it forward thing, like something that you keep your eyes on that you think is cool, that is running maybe in parallel with you or in front of you or behind you, that you support?
I mean, the thing is, I have a lot of respect for any startup, which especially in when it comes to personal care, or I kind of admire anyone who's kind of got the cojones or the balls to, or the guts to really attack one of the big players in their own pond, you know, in their own pitch, you know, like, well, we're going to take on deodorants, or we're going to take on cleaning products. Yeah, they're the ones I really look at and kind of admire, to be honest.
Yeah, I can see that. And do you think it's going to be difficult to tear them down? Like if we fast forward, I don't know, 10 years going forward, will we still see all of this shelf with plastic single-use products in a supermarket store? Or do you think our behavior has changed due to your products and others out there? As you in one way say competitors, but I guess you do this type of battle or race also side by side, trying to change behaviors and building other type of ecosystems besides the single use plastics.
Yeah, interesting question. I mean, like, just going back to your original question, who would I highlight? I mean, if it was one, there's one company who did a Kickstarter actually, and you know, they're called Tooth.eco, and they wanted to get rid of plastic toothbrushes by offering this sleek, like, anodized aluminium toothbrush. And they're a company in the UK, you know, cool people, and they've gone through the same struggles which I have, but they're still battling away to offer people this plastic-free product. And what they're finding also is, I mean, when you actually look at the size of these big conglomerates or P&G or whoever, I mean, can we really battle them? I mean, that's probably not as a single team, but if we could group together, I think we possibly could, you know, and really try and make a difference. And it's something which upsets me, but what I don't understand sometimes within this industry is we're all kind of fighting the same battle of, you know, against plastics. And sometimes I've reached out to a few, not even competitors, people within the same space to say, hey, come on, why don't we partner up? I'll offer my customers your products at a discount, or introduce your products to my customers. Let's kind of work together. And I can't say that's been the easiest. People aren't so open to working together or sharing customers or introducing products. But Tooth is, you know. So if I'm going to highlight anyone, I think people should check out Tooth.eco.
Yeah, that sounds good. And regarding the ones who are out there, some final advice for the ones who want to become the entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs, or maybe are in the struggle right now, what advice could you give them?
Well, I think there's different stages, aren't there? There's the people who say, I'm going to build something, but never really start, you know. And I've got a lot of friends like that. I mean, you can always come up with a great idea, People come up with them all the time, but unless you try to execute it, you know, it's never going to happen. So for people which keep having ideas, I would say the best thing is just get going. Just make the smallest, shittest prototype possible of the product you want to build. I don't know, one of the products I created was called Ocular Clip. It was a lens protector because I hate massive sunglass cases. So I created this thing called Ocular Clip. It had magnets because I love magnets. And they're just two little leather clips which clip on your glasses and protect them. But my first prototype of that was like I just basically cut two big bits of card out and sellotape them together and just put them on my glasses. Like, will this work? I think this will work. You know, I think it will. And started building from there. So my advice for people in that stage, just get going. And it's fun. You know, make it. Make them rubbish. Make them crap. Let your friends laugh at them. And then for people who are kind of, you know, kind of halfway there where they've kind of made a website or they've got this idea, you know, you just got to keep going. I mean, if 95% of people can't make enough money from their startup initially, you know, it has to be like a side project initially, unless you get some funding, of course. So always just make sure you've got an hour or 2 hours a day every day to sit down and dedicate to your projects, you know, kind of have, you know, that kind of strategic way of thinking about it to make sure you're always improving it. Otherwise it will never get, you know, it will never get going. But yeah, just enjoy the ride. You know, I mean, it's been 3 years on this deodorant and I'm only just about to launch it. I mean, many times I nearly threw it in the bin. I was like, this isn't going to happen. I give up. What am I doing? Should just get a normal job. But here I am, still plugging away.
Well, I mean, I really want to wish you the best of good luck. I'm for sure will check out the Kickstarter campaign, and I think you who listen should too. And I really hope to have one of those on my shelf, and then maybe my grandkids, who is not alive yet, obviously, can perhaps inherit it. That should be the goal, right?
Oh, exactly. And for anyone listening who wants to look, from the 2nd of March or from the 3rd, it will be on Kickstarter. If you just type in lifelong deodorant, then you'll find it for sure.
Sounds good. I think we will do like this. We added the link in the episode description here as well, so you can find it. Of course.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Adam, again for being a guest and for your advice that we probably should charge our listeners for. But today you get them for free, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, take care. And I'm looking forward also, maybe we should do a follow-up in a few years when everything is successfully launched, you know, and people know about lifelong.
Is that when I'm the entrepreneur is sitting on the beach somewhere sipping a pina colada, as people think we do? it won't be like that, I'm sure. But definitely, I'd love to catch up again, see where I am, see where the product's taken me, and see where the brand goes, basically.
So. Well, sounds good. For now, though, take care. And again, good luck with Lifelong, and a big thank you for being on the show.
All right. Thanks for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If you like our show, support us by following this podcast at your favorite podcast platform and on our LinkedIn webpage. Also, we love feedback, so would love to receive your rating and a comment. Maybe you didn't get inspired enough by this episode? Well, go try another one. To quote our perhaps biggest inventor and inspirational source of all times, of course a Swede, Alfred Nobel. If I have 1,000 ideas and only one turns out to be good, then I'm satisfied.